And good evening, everyone, and welcome to our final Home and Away wrap show for 2017. And was a bit, oops, what's going on there? A bit diabolical, a bit meaningless. Be interesting to see what our panellists have to say. And joining me, as usual, I have Macca23 and Nikki. How you going, guys?
Yeah, well, I'm one of the disappointed ones. I thought we were terrible.
And I'm one who was like, meh, who cares?
All right. Well, it was a pretty entertaining round of footy. So let's just go through the results first, and then we can have at it with our analysis. We had the farewell match for Hodge and Murphy and co. on Friday night. Hawthorn getting up in an entertaining game, 99-90. Meaningless there. Collingwood and Melbourne. How did Melbourne lose this game? They, regardless of the result today, Melbourne only have themselves to blame because they should have towed up Collingwood, but they went down 99-83. Oh, my God, Melbourne.
But in fairness, they didn't play that well. But Collingwood, I thought, played very well.
And we actually discussed that on Tuesday night, that this was a game that we were anticipating that Collingwood probably could win this one. Because they hadn't been playing too badly the past couple of weeks. And Melbourne have tired, absolutely tired.
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
Ben Reid dropping out before the game. Melbourne should have won it. They've only got themselves to blame for missing the eight. Brisbane and North Melbourne for the number one draft pick, or maybe even the... wouldn't have been the Jake Lever Cup. The Collingwood-Melbourne game was the Jake Lever Cup. North Melbourne getting up after Brisbane got off to a good start. North 130 to Brisbane 79, didn't mean anything. Sydney having a cracking win over Carlton, who have also limped to the line a little bit. And just quickly, they reckon Carlton are improving, but one less win than last year. Do you guys see them as improving?
No, I don't.
Well, their defence has gotten better. But we saw the same thing happen with Melbourne. It's what Ruse did. You really concentrate on getting the team defence working. Once that's working, then you can switch to your offence. But until then, when they're in that rebuilding phase, and it's exactly what Melbourne did, and they did have those couple of seasons where they kind of dropped down a little bit lower. This is Melbourne. But you could see that there was something there that they were building towards. I think I can see something similar there in Carlton. They've had some games where they've really pushed top teams, but they've really got to work on that forward area. They've got some great talent up there, which is what's held them through, but that's their next step they've got to take.
Have you analysed what you said, Nikki? What you really said is they've gone backwards to go forward.
But we've seen that's what Melbourne did.
Yeah, look, I personally think they're playing a better brand of football. Don't know how well their team defence is going when they go down by 80-odd points. But overall, I think they're going all right. The one query I would have about Carlton is that they still rely quite heavily on their mature midfielders, and once they drop off, have they got anyone to back Patrick Cripps and co. up in the middle? Anyway, we'll move on from that. Port Adelaide declaring themselves flag favourites after beating up on possibly the worst team to play AFL football for a long time, Gold Coast, 135-20. And Gary Ablett probably epitomises the culture at that club at the moment.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right there, Phoenix. He's an absolute disgrace with Gary Ablett. All he wants to do is bail off and go back home to Geelong with his mates. If I was the Gold Coast, I'd make it virtually impossible for him to do so by asking for some outrageous figure because he is contracted. And Geelong won't pay it. Let him retire. I've had a gutful of Ablett. And as far as the Gold Coast went, I thought their performance was disgusting. To not score against Port Adelaide for two quarters, well, I reckon there'd be under 15 teams that would.
It was a really interesting case with them, Brisbane and Carlton, as to who was better at hiding the tanking.
I don't reckon the Gold Coast were tanking. I reckon they're pitiful, Nikki, to be honest with you.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking with there. But I actually, on Brisbane, I think Brisbane actually tanked that game, and Fagan's trying to hide it.
Absolutely. I think, you know, they've been playing much better football than North Melbourne the last 2 or 3 weeks. So they tanked, but I'm with Phoenix. Gold Coast never tanked. They're just no good.
Anyway, moving on, probably the game of the round was the Geelong-GWS game, and after a close tussle for quite some time, Geelong kicked away to win 103-59, so what's that, 44 points, until second spot on the ladder, and give us our first minor premiership since 2005, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, and also provide us with the team we're going to play in a fortnight's time, and I have to say, GWS started okay, but once the game got going, they also showed they had a lot of weaknesses in their side.
Well, they don't do defence. They don't do defence up forward. They don't do defence down back. They don't do defence through the midfield. They rely on just, oh, we've got talent and we can run, and if we get a chance and win the ball off, we go. And that's why I'm absolutely confident against them. They were deplorable against Geelong. They had everything to play for, and they couldn't bring it.
And the other thing, Nikki, is that when you analyse who they've got in defence, they are definitely a tall defender short.
If ever there was a team that would benefit from an off-season trekking the Kokoda, it would be GWS, because at the moment they just rely on too many individuals and they would not know how to play like a team if someone spelled it out for them. So I don't know what Leon Cameron's going to do there, but I personally don't think they're a threat in this final series.
I'm with you. Having seen the way they played, and when you analyse their team, as I say, particularly, and Nicky is quite right about the defence aspect, and when you analyse their defence, I mean, you take Shaw, for example, half he's kicked a little kick to himself, kicking out from a point, or when he's dropped right back on his own just to get another kick. They're pretty weak in defence, in my opinion, and I think you're quite right, Phoenix. They don't bear hardship too well.
No, we had Fremantle keeping it interesting against the Bombers before going down by 15 points. Essendon 107, Fremantle 92. Essendon making their first final series for a couple of years. I don't know how I feel about that, but anyway, there it is. We had Richmond and St Kilda fighting out an entertaining win before Richmond prevailed. St Kilda, a couple of little mini comebacks there. Richmond 122-81, and sealing a top four spot, actually finishing third in the end.
Yep, and they played Geelong, of course, next week, and then we'll see. We'll probably how much they have progressed, because I still look at their forward line, and it's worked well with in the minor round games with only the one key forward, but I'm not so sure how that's going to work in finals.
Yeah, don't disagree. It's hard to get a read on Richmond, I reckon. They could be a little bit of a wild card in the final series. Not playing too bad, but I reckon they're a bit fragile. But they get on a roll, like any other team this season. Get them on a roll, a bit hard to stop. Anyway, the final 2017 home and away ladder reads like this. Adelaide Crows on top with 15 wins and 6 losses and the winning percentage of 135.98. As I mentioned earlier, the first minor premiership since 2005. We have Geelong second on equal wins and 117%. Richmond coming in third on equal wins, but one more loss. Just dipping out there by 2 points. GWS rounding at the top four on 14 wins. Then we have Port finishing fifth, courtesy of playing Gold Coast twice in a season. Sydney finishing sixth, and they're now, 14-2. And they're going to have to go 18-2 to win the flag, probably a big ask. Essendon, 12 wins. West Coast, 12 wins, just edging out Melbourne on 12 wins. And then the rest that we don't care about anymore, except for the Western Bulldogs, who predictably didn't back up their premiership this year with a defence.
Yes, I'm very pleased about that aspect of it, but very disappointed with our game today, but we'll talk about that.
It'd be, Interesting to revisit, because didn't we do something towards the start of the year where we thought we kind of did our own ladder?
Yes.
That'd be interesting to revisit to see how well we actually got stuff.
Yeah, I might look at that before Tuesday Night Live and see how we went. I can't remember what I picked, that's for sure. Anyway, onwards to the Adelaide Crows game, and it was West Coast with far more to play for. Two extra players on the field and a very partisan home crowd. 15 goals, 10-100 to pretty lazy Adelaide, 10 goals, 11-71. 29 points in the end was the margin, and got West Coast, as we've mentioned, into the eight. Initial thoughts, Macca, come on, give it to us.
Well, firstly, I want to query about the extra two men.
They were deplorable.
Were you not watching the game? There were so many frees, soft frees paid to West Coast, and so many non-frees paid to us. It was ridiculous.
And the 50s missed. There were so many 50s they missed.
I'm not arguing about that, but it's extra three men.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I'm still living back in the 90s.
That was my point. I thought
one of the umpires was okay, but the other two were bad. The other thing is, and we know who's going to win the cock womble on Tuesday night, but whoever decided light fucking blue up against teams wearing all white Guernseys was ridiculous.
Yeah, well, I've got a couple of other nominations, but that definitely is a good one for it. And the umpire was disgraceful, absolutely disgraceful, and almost to the point of cheating. But if they're not cheating, they're incompetent. But coming back to Adelaide, also I thought that we played very, very poorly. Well, that's not quite right. Some players played, I thought, outstanding games, but unfortunately we had some players who, I could only put it down to, they're trying to preserve themselves to make sure they didn't get hurt in 2 weeks' time, because they just didn't really participate in the game.
What's wrong with that?
I do like to see a little bit more effort. And another thing that drove me absolutely crazy was the stupid handballs. I mean, seriously, if you took at the ratio of our handballs to kicking, at halftime it was about 20% more than we'd handballed than kicked. And we got a little bit better in the second half, but it still was so many poor, crazy handballs. I don't like developing bad habits, even if it is for a nothing game.
Nikki, what do you reckon?
It was such a dead rubber before we started. And the one thing I know, just looking at the thread, what people wanted today, most of it was, we want no injuries. And we pretty much got that. I mean, Keith got a knock to the back of his head. But it was really obvious that certain players, and even those who did play well, you could see that, yeah, sometimes they would put in for tackles, and other times it was like, no, we'll just let that one go.
Nikki, we had two tackles at about the 20-minute mark of the first quarter.
Yeah, but they didn't have that many either.
12.
No, I think it was 9 at that. So the first time they talked about it was 9-2 was what I heard.
And then it became 12-2.
Wasn't that into the second quarter?
Second quarter though? No. Who cares, Macca? Who cares? Like, I don't want to see anyone getting injured, and if players were playing not to get injured, then I'm happy with that, even though that's risky.
Yeah, but it was in, to me, we didn't have Talia as our general in the back line, and we didn't have Walker as our general in the forward line, and neither of those two areas function as well as they should.
I thought the back line wasn't too.
Anyway, let's look at some head-to-head stats, because I think, Macca, to be perfectly frank with you, and I don't mean to be rude, but I think your view on the game is ridiculous. I just don't understand why you're analysing the game as if it was a game to be even analysed. We weren't playing at 100%. We were playing at 50%. There were lots of non-efforts. There was a lack of interest in tackling. We certainly went for the ball when it was there, but I counted three or four times where blokes didn't go where they could have gone and probably would have gone in any other time, but not this week, because they didn't want to get flattened. And fair enough too. And I just don't really see what the problem is.
You might find my attitude ridiculous, but I don't know whether Don Pike would. I'm sure there were many, many things that he was unhappy with.
I'm sure that Don would be very happy with zero injuries.
Yep.
You keep harking back the one thing, but you've still got to be playing a reasonably good bland round of football going into a final. The worst thing you can do, in my opinion, is to cart a poor form into a final. And
Macca, we got within 17 points without really trying, and then we kind of pulled back a little bit, and they had everything to play for. They threw everything at us, and they couldn't beat us by a huge amount.
I'm not saying it's the end of the world. All I'm saying is when I played, I never knew nothing but trying, and to me, I just didn't like the fact that some players just didn't put in enough.
Well, you're the bloke last week and the last couple of weeks that's been banging on about wanting to play certain opposition. So, and also back in your day, wasn't this thing called a bye week between the last round of the home and away season and the first round of the finals. Momentum is killed by that bye week, unless you've been selected in the Legends game. And if you want to have a look at some recent history on that, just ask Western Bulldogs how their round 23 game went last year.
Well, yep. That's true. The same ground, worst result. I understand that. Anyhow, you guys are easy pleased. That's all I can say.
Well, I'm pretty pleased that we finished top with two rounds to go, mate, to be honest.
Yeah, we've had a season none of us predicted at the start of the year. If you look at how we've gone over the whole of the year, we've been the best team. Like, even though Sydney's got their run on in the last, the last 16 games, which is, pretty amazing in itself. But we've been fairly consistent over the whole season. What we were worried about, we've actually seen changes happening and we've seen positives come out of it. And as Pike has just said in his... that basically... the disappointment of today's game is there, but a new season starts now. And that's what it's all about.
And I totally agree with that. And I take that same attitude. It doesn't stop me being disappointed with our effort today.
I just don't understand how you can be disappointed. Like, who cares?
I care about every game.
But that's stupid, though, because the game meant nothing. I would have quite happily forfeited that game.
Well, we think differently.
Yeah. Well, I want to win a flag, and what I wouldn't have liked seeing is Brodie Smith not pulling out when he was running with the flight of the ball and getting poleaxed by Kennedy coming the other way. That's what I wouldn't have liked to have seen, and that's the effort you're expecting, Macca, which you just weren't going to get today for very good reasons.
But, no, I'm talking about things like, for example... David McKay, who did put his body on the line many times to get the ball, and then handballed it straight to a guy who was had a guy ready to wrap his arms around him, and therefore the ball went nowhere, or they went to hold the ball. It was just crazy stuff like that. And to me, there wasn't a lot of thought in the game at times.
Now, what you're probably missing is that we didn't have guys running to the right positions because we weren't playing with the intensity that we would have needed to had we needed to win that game. That's the bottom line. Anyway, let's go to head-to-head stats and disposals. We out-disposed West Coast, but that's because they did force us into a lot of handballing. We went at more kicks, more handballs to kicks, 213 handballs to 202 kicks. Disposals for West Coast 392. West Coast took 108 marks to 87, 59 tackles to 62. So we obviously out tackled them after that start. Source did pretty well in the hitouts, 54 to 42. The frees, 23 to 12. We've talked about that. Look, our disposals per scoring shot was a bit above average, 19.76. Which is usually down around the 12 mark. So, again, we were wasteful going into the forward 50. Clearances, we smashed them 50 to 33, but we didn't do a lot with them. 53 clangers to 50. Our rebound 50s fairly even, 37 to 32. Inside 50s fairly even, 50 to 53. Contested posies, 152 to 142. Uncontested, 245 to us, 284. West Coast had 302 effective disposals to our 314, so we didn't waste the ball terribly according to that disposal efficiency stat, but we certainly did, as you rightly point out, Macca, give the ball into, to players that were under pressure, and I think that's where West Coast's pressure was what told in the end. Contested marks, 20-5, they really did do a number on us up there, and Josh Jenkins didn't really present well up forward, I didn't think. Marks inside 59-7, thanks to Mitch McGovern. We smashed them in clearances 50-33. That included 35-21 around the ground and 15-12 at the centre. Rebound 50s, I've already said. Why do they double that one up? And yeah, that's really about it. Metres gained, they certainly won the territory battle 6,360-5,696, and we turned it over 77 times to 69. So, really, I mean, we won where we want to win, which is in the clearances, and we won, we just lost contested possession, but it was pretty close, but we just didn't use it well.
No, the turnovers were very, very costly. In fact, they scored the majority of their score from our turnovers.
Yep, that's right. We either turned it over or we gave it to blokes under pressure, and they were able to wrestle the ball clear. It really was, to me, it was just, I was watching two teams. One team were desperate to win and the other team weren't. That's what I was watching.
We did watch the same thing in that sense, no doubt about that. But we also, the irony is, we had a midfield that absolutely slaughtered them. Normally, when you win the midfield, you win the game. And we had a ruckman that was winning the taps. We had Matty Crouch, who went super elite rather than elite. He played an outstanding game, Matty Crouch, and his brother not far behind him. And Rory Sloan, a top game again, outstanding game. We had three outstanding midfielders and a top ruckman. And, normally you win the game.
It was kind of that burst they had in the third quarter, which is when they started actually working harder to Jacob's tap. So they got on top in the clearances in that third quarter, and that was their little break. And once they got that, then that was kind of it. And they also clamped down on Sloan. Interestingly, in the second quarter, when we actually had a better run on without him actually being dominant.
Yeah, they did get a little wedge in there, Nicky, you're quite right. But you could really divide our team up into almost halves, where you had half the team playing it as a proper game and the other half who without them with self-preservation in mind.
Well, I think it was an indicative of what we wanted to see in terms of our midfield intensity. I mean, the Crouch boys had 87 disposals between them, a new world record. Brad Crouch, 10 clearances as well as 6 inside 50s. I actually thought he shaded Matt Crouch on the day. 42 touches, 5 marks, 6 tackles, 6 inside 50s, 10 clearances, 3 rebound 50s, 15 contested possessions, win at 83%. I thought it was the best game we've seen from Brad for quite some time.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, it's a great toss-up, and it will only become a matter of opinion and with amongst people, whether it was Matt or whether it was Brad, and I wouldn't argue with either anybody who said it's Matt nor anybody who said it's Brad, because they were both just outstanding games.
And Brad was shitty at Matt for one stage because Matt would not handball him the ball in the forward line. He kept giving it to everybody else but Brad.
But Phoenix is right. I mean, Brad's game was outstanding, and that's the level that he can play at. And his graph has been going upwards now for some time. And if we can take this sort of form into the finals, it'll be very, very helpful.
He's been down the last two games a little bit and a bit fumbly. He was still a little fumbly this game. But it was we he was back on that upward trajectory. And I think he's still got quite a bit of improvement to go.
Yeah. I think you're probably right.
Matty had 45 disposals, obviously, 19 kicks, 26 handballs, 2 marks, kick 1 goal 1, 7 tackles, 5 inside 50s, 4 clearances, 4 rebound 50s as well, 13 contested possessions, went at 71%, and the only blemish really for Matt was 9 turnovers. But between them, they did a fantastic job. Rory Sloane was the other one. Oh, I thought it was Rory's best game for quite some time, actually. 18 kicks, 20 handballs for 38 touches, 6 marks, 14 clearances, 3 rebound 50s, 23 contested possessions, game high. Went at 71%, which is good for Rory. What's that bloody FCI? Oh, stoppage clearances. 12 of his clearances were at the stoppage. Excellent game by Rory, I thought.
Well, the interesting thing about it is, too, that he was tagged, and the guy that him, I can't remember who he tagged last week, but I think it was either the last week or week before, and he tagged a very good player out of existence. But, Rory, he just played. The thing that when you've been tagged is to play as if you haven't got a tag and just go for the ball. If you just keep going for the ball, you'll eventually get it, but Rory seems to have overcome this tag situation now, and his game today was fantastic. Tough and hard as always, and he's got an amazing ability to get the ball under competitive pressure.
Yeah, I agree with that, Macca. I saw that Rory had a bloke on him pretty much all game, and I think he's just come to the conclusion that he just needs to back himself in and straight line the ball. He's worrying less about his opponent now and where his opponent is, and he's just worrying about the ball, and that's when Rory plays best. Rory led 26 touches, 13 and 13, had the 4 marks, the 4 tackles, 3 inside 50s. Only 5 contested posies, went at 85%. But by gee, is it just me or is lately Rory Laird just being a little bit less effective with his disposals?
He's dropped off a little bit.
In third quarter, he was actually put in the midfield.
Yeah, just I think Rory has got to start getting a bit more hurt factor into his kicks again. He used to be really good at slicing through with that diagonal kick into the corridor, but just of late he seems to be ballooning the ball a bit and not really kicking it to teammates' advantage, so he needs to tidy that up. I thought Seedsman had a really good game, 12 and 13 for 25. 3 marks, kick 1 goal 2, 3 tackles, 8 inside 50s, 4 clearances, went at 92% disposal efficiency, had 6 score involvements. I would be, and we'll talk about the other guy in a minute, but I would be thinking about Seeds for Atkins, to be honest.
Well, you won't get a fight out of me. I thought Seeds was terrific, and he did play like a guy who's hasn't been in the team and wants to get in the team, and I think deserves to be in the team on his effort today.
What was his time on ground percentage? Because I don't think he spent that long.
73 was on a fair bit.
Oh, that was okay. So I think he needed to have a bit more impact, but I agree with you guys that he was definitely better than Atkins. And he most definitely put his hand up to show. And he was the one who was breaking the lines and was creating. I mean, that play from our back lines up forwards, he was actually in the back lines when that started. And for him to compose himself running into 50, know he's being chased and still having to kick at a decent distance was great.
You're right. Yeah. And he must have felt buggered because he'd put in so many efforts and run so far. I doubted his ability to hold it all together to kick that goal, but no, straight through the middle. Well done.
Team high 603 metres gained too, compared to Atkins, who had 159 metres gained. I think it's a no-brainer. Let's look at Rory Atkins' stats. 6 kicks, 15 handballs for 21, 5 marks, 1 tackle, 2 inside 50s, 4 clearances. 10 contested, only went at 66%. disposal efficiency, turned it over four times. I don't like Rory's form at the moment, and I would be having Seedsman in.
Well, he pissed me off today. He, in the first 12 possessions, he had one kick and 11 handballs when he had many an opportunity to kick, and yet he's one of the ones that did the very wasteful handballs. I just thought his game was a real nothing game today, and added really not very, very little to the team at all. And he's only had one decent game, in my opinion, in about the last five. So if you're going to pick on somebody to say bye-bye, you know, you're back for a run of the twos, he'd be the one.
He seems to be trying to work on, like, more contested type possessions, which is very unusual for him. So I wonder whether that was an instruction or whether he was just playing shit.
Well, Nicky, when he was playing well, he was getting the ball and releasing it very quickly. The minute he starts doing dancing and prancing and or hanging on to it a little bit too long, that's when he starts going silly.
Yeah, you can't have 159 metres gained from your outside player. It's wasteful. It's pointless. Even Wayne Miller had 350. You know, he... He's getting caught with the ball. He's trying to do too much. He seems confused. He wants to give the perfect disposal. He often kicks or handballs to a person in a bad position. And he has no feel for where he is on the ground. Like, I remember once he passed it into the corridor, handballed it into the corridor to one of our blokes who was flat-footed and right under the pump, and it cost us a goal. And I don't like his form at the moment. I don't mind him as a player. I think he's got a lot of things to work on. But right now, if there was one query in our team, and that's including Charlie Cameron, if there was one clip query, it'd be Rory Atkins at the moment.
Yeah, I'm very disappointed with him at the moment.
I thought Sam Jacobs did a really good job, 10 and 7 for 17. Only took the three marks, but a couple of tackles, 51 hit-outs. Five clearances on his own. Needs to do a little bit more around the ground. I think we actually commented on that last week, but he was up against Vardy and the other bloke who I've forgotten, and Petrie. And, you know, neither of those two are slouches, even though Petrie's about 106. But I thought Sauce did all right today.
Good game. I thought he played it. I thought he'd be one of our better players.
Yeah, a couple of our nice movements through the midfield, we were actually using him. He was getting in outlet spaces in case of need. And there was one case he actually did a nice little walk around and a kick forward around a much smaller, more agile defender, which was nice to see. Because we know he can actually do that. He's a lot more nimble on his feet than people realise.
I thought Douglas had a really good game. He only had the 22 possessions, 8 and 14, but I just thought he was involved quite a bit. Three marks, only kicked a point, two tackles, three goal assists. Sorry, I've just lost my spot here. 10 contested possessions, went at 86%, seven score involvements. His stats don't look huge, but I just felt like he was around the play quite a bit.
Well, you would have liked him, and because... When you did notice him actually winning some very, very hard ball. He worked really hard, this young Dougie, and I thought he won some hard balls today. And he was a good backup to the other guys. I thought he did a reasonably good job.
The word I would have used for his possessions and his presence on the ground was impactful. I thought even though he didn't get it as much as the others, what he did do, there was quite a bit of impact in a positive way for us.
Nicely put, Nicky.
Yep, fair call. DMAC had the 17 touches, didn't have a huge amount of impact, only the five contested possessions. I thought Jake Lever was a little bit quiet, only the 17 touches, took seven marks though, so that's his usual fare when it's 76.5%, a couple of one percenters. Look, I think our backline did all right. Kelly did all right. I thought after a couple of brain fades, I thought Hardigan did all right on Kennedy. I thought Alex Keith did all right on Darling. Darling, yeah, you know, that last mark by Darling Macca, is exactly what I was talking about in terms of the difference between their intensity and their desire and ours. I mean, that was a brilliant mark, but there was no way any of our players were going to get in his way.
Okay, can't argue with that.
What do we think about the inclusions? Or we've spoken about Seedsman. What about Wayne Miller? He had 12 and 4 for 16, took 5 marks, 3 inside 50s, a couple of clearances, only had the 3 contested posies and still burnt the ball 56.2. Started well, I thought, Miller, but faded a bit.
Yeah, I don't think he's in our best 22 when we're really up and going.
It was really hard to tell where he was playing. I think from the commentary, we were actually playing him more up forward because they were saying that he was actually matched up against the elder McGovern. I was quite pleased with some of his efforts because we saw him actually going down to the ball, willing to take the hit and willing to actually dish one or two out, which is what we've lamented about previously. But I agree with you there, Phoenix, that he needed to do more.
Yeah, we always say that about him because he does some nice stuff, but never does enough of it.
No, he had an opportunity today, I thought. And you're right, Nick, he was playing predominantly half forward or high half forward and often on a far bigger opponent in Mitch's brother. And Mitch's brother did a shoulder halfway through the game, so he was a bit ineffective. But I didn't think he did enough either. And you're right, we're always saying that. But he's still young. He's still young, so time is on his side. Tommy Lynch just turned up and played, didn't do a hell of a lot. Josh Jenkins.
No, he took out McGovern.
Oh, I thought he played a shocker, Nicky.
No, Mitch, the other McGovern's shoulder. That was courtesy of Lynchy.
Yeah, well, he's one that I support Phoenix with, that he was having a bit of a holiday.
Well, when your game style is to run up and down the park 387 times, Macca, I forgive the guy for having a week off, to be honest.
But to me, what that also says is how much of his run is impacted by the fact that Walker is doing the same and is spreading their defence. And we missed him so much. That was how obvious it was.
Yeah, I agree with you, Nicky. No argument there.
Yeah, because we didn't change our forward structure at all. We just didn't have one of them playing. I mean, in the past, we've had, when Jenkins was out before, we had Menzel in, you know, to try and do that high half forward work. And, you know, we didn't really replace Tex's role at all. We just ran with what we had. And, you know, I didn't feel like the coaching staff did anything to try and you know, change up how we're doing it. And that's why we kept kicking it down the throat of, what's his name, McGovern, the other McGovern. You know, he ended up with the ball quite a number of times because we were kicking to where Jenkins probably would have been, and Jenkins wasn't there because he was doing what Tex would have been doing. How do we see Riley Knight? 4 and 7, 5 contested possessions, didn't do a huge amount.
Seemed to be tagging a little bit at one stage in the middle of the game, but I think he was being used up forward in the first and the last quarter, and that's really only when I noticed him.
Yeah, he was being used as a tagger. Not one of his great games. He does go in hard, no question about that, and he's prepared to take knocks and bumps, but he didn't get a real lot of the ball. I mean, he only had the 11 possessions, but in fairness, he was being used as a bit of a stopper.
Yeah, what about Charlie? Only had the 10 touches, and yet I felt like he was a little bit more interested this week.
Yeah, he was a lot more switched on this week. And one thing I didn't understand was when he was being pursued by...
Jetta,
yeah. And he just had an edge on him, and he could have disposed of the ball. For some reason, he stopped, and then he ended up getting caught. I couldn't quite work that out.
It's a rugby league thing that to balk around those players, because often you are actually playing against players are as quick as you are. So he does this kind of little dance step, but Jetta was wise to it. Now, they never actually showed the replay of the actual free kick because I swear Jetta pushed him full on in the back in order to get that kick out in the fall. So that should have actually been a free to Charlie.
Yes, he did.
And not... the out on the full
He did push him in the back.
I hope Charlie realises that when he ran Jetta down earlier in the game and gave him a nice little rub on the head, you know, don't do that. We saw what happened with Essendon against us when Joey Danaher went off a bit early and they'd never kicked a goal for the next seven or whatever. Cameron can't be doing that sort of stuff until he's getting 20 disposals a game, in my opinion.
To be fair, though, the Danaher one, none of our team actually really saw that except Brat.
No, no, but what I'm saying is that Charlie isn't in a position at the moment to give someone else's shit. When Lewis Jetta had 15-1 and far more impact in the game, you know, arguably won them the game in the end when got that turnover in the last and kicked a goal. So Charlie needs to do more before he can start getting on the front foot like that, I reckon.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's really the tale of the tape. Mayweather beat McGregor, predictably, and I've got nothing much more to say on the game because, unlike you, Macca, I really didn't care.
No, but talking about getting ready for the next game, there isn't room when Taylor comes back in for all of Lever, Hardigan and Keith. And so Lever obviously will be one of them that stays, so it'll come down to Hardigan versus Keith. And how did you two see that?
Well, personally, I think it's about matchups, and against GWS with those two big tools, as well as Keith has been playing, I'd probably play Hardigan next match.
One thing that scares me about Hardigan is that lobotomy of his. It comes up out every so often, and then we had two brain fades in a row that led to goals, and yet he did some very good stuff after that. So he's a bit of a mixed bag.
He was actually, I think Hardigan is a better matchup for Kennedy than what Talia is. And we actually saw that. Because he's that little bit quicker. And Talia's a great defender, but he just doesn't have the speed that Hardigan has. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see who we go with, because I actually think we are more assured with Keith when he's got ball in hand. And he hasn't been too bad defensively. So it's going to be interesting to see who they go with.
It is interesting because I wouldn't say Keith had a good game either. So, I mean, he made a couple of bad boo-boos as well. So I thought Hardigan, he did do a couple of really bad errors, I thought he got better as the game went along, I thought.
Except for the tap that went straight to them and they kicked a goal.
That's one of the ones I'm talking about.
That was towards the end of the game, Macca.
I know. But he also, I'm talking about probably where I thought he shone was, in spite of that, I think it was third quarter, wasn't it? No, that was fourth quarter, I think.
Look, I think you get both. You get similar things from Keith and Hardigan at the moment. I think Hardigan is a little bit stronger aerially against the bigger opponents, and that's probably the only reason why I would pick him ahead of Alex at the moment. I think, you know, you're going to get a couple of moments that make you put your head in your hands from both of them at this stage. Keith because he's still learning, and Hardigan because he's just prone to that sort of thing. But I think matching up against GWS next week, I'd prefer to have our mainstays, and it's really comforting to have a bloke like Alex Keith on standby if one of those two goes down.
Yep, can't argue with that.
So what about, we've got a couple of others. So Tex obviously comes back in. We didn't really replace Tex like for like. So we've got Tex and Greenwood to come in. Who comes out for yours?
Well, Miller definitely.
Correct, yeah, he comes out for me too.
So that's the Greenwood swap, in a way. Be interested to see what they do regarding Knight, because he really hasn't been setting the world on fire the past couple of games, but I know we're very keen on him just for that pressure and everything else that he can provide. And he also provides that flexibility. If we need to tag, we can use him for that. It's going to be interesting because, like you were saying before, Phoenix, about Seisman, he did enough today to say he deserves to be in there. But whether they want to go with the continuity of Atkins, and it might be that Seeds then gets dropped in order to make Walker come in.
I don't think continuity at this point comes into it. I think you're right about Riley Knight. I think his versatility keeps him in the frame, and the fact that he can play a cool-down role keeps him in the frame over a Wayne Miller or a Rory Atkins. Miller, for mine, didn't do enough today, and is I still think Miller is another 12 to 18 months off in terms of his build and his just his maturity. And Rory Atkins, he'd be mine simply because I don't like he had that one good game when we had that shootout match, and he was able to get a lot of free ball. But you're not going to get any of those games in finals, and he was found out against Sydney last year, and he seems to be suffering from the yips a little bit again at this time this year. So I would be leaving Paul Seedsman in.
Yeah, you just raised that Sydney game from last year, and just mentioning that is enough to convince me that it would be Rory Atkins out and keeping the Seeds in. I think Seeds got to stay, and I thought that he showed he can be a very valuable asset, and he does play a lot more direct than Rory does. So, yep, that's the change. They're the two changes I would make. That it would be Atkins out and Miller out, and the two other two come back in.
And the AFL are a crook of shit because at 8 o'clock they were supposed to tell us who's playing who and where, and it's 18 minutes past and we still don't know. Not only do they not understand how colours work, they don't understand how clocks work.
Yeah, you know, do you expect any more? I mean, what would you guys prefer? I mean, I was saying to Nikki off air before we started, I'd probably prefer the Saturday night. Knowing our luck, we'll get the bloody Thursday night because it seemed to turn up for Thursday night games. What do you guys reckon?
To me, I would be going for the Thursday night game. And I know that our coach, I heard him talking about this, and that's his preference because it just divides on the basis of presuming of winning and going into a preliminary final. It sort of breaks it up into a week and a half rather than having a game and then missing 2 weeks.
It's a fair call, Macca, that is.
Yeah, someone was just pointed out they're probably actually still arguing about Geelong will be arcing up that they're not playing at Skilled Stadium, that they have to play at the MCG.
Well,
guess what? It's the AFL finals. You've got a home state final and it's going to get played at the MCG.
Yeah, it's about time Gillen showed that he has got a pair of testicles and that just tell Geelong to shut up and turn up at the MCG like the other teams will do.
See, I disagree with that because it's Richmond's home ground.
But it's also, no, it's also Geelong's home ground.
No, it's Geelong's, like, secondary home ground. But let's be honest, they've earned home ground advantage over a fellow Victorian
team. No, they haven't. It has never been you've qualified a home ground. You've qualified a home state. That's right.
So now that you've interrupted me, I'll continue what I was going to say. They finished higher on the ladder than Richmond, and the game is going to be played at Richmond's home ground to accommodate Richmond's crowd, which effectively removes any advantage that Geelong had from finishing second. And I think in the first week of the finals, it should be home ground advantage, and I think Geelong have earned that right, to be honest.
The AFL always made it clear that it's not all about being fair. It's all about TV and money.
Yep.
Yeah, I know that, Macca, but I'm talking about hypothetically. I think you're right. The AFL will lean towards 70,000 people rather than 25 or 30 or whatever they can get down there. But in the first week of the finals, I don't think it's fair that Geelong have to play at Richmond's home ground.
Well, I don't give a shit because I'm with Nicky. I just think that they're playing in their home state. They don't have to travel. It is their secondary home ground. And I think that Richmond supporters have every right to go to the game just as much as Geelong supporters do. and Steve Chip for Geelong.
And the fact that we've lost a home final to Melbourne, that's happened in the past. It was under the old system,
bring that up. That was bloody ages ago.
Yeah, it was during the MCG
banking era.
Yeah, but it's happened before. The AFL don't give a shit. The AFL is only interested in maximising their dollars because every ticket sales does not go back to the clubs. The clubs have no rights over what is shown beforehand on the grounds. It is all AFL controlled. You have to ask permission to do your normal pre-game stuff. And they'll sometimes allow it. Other times they disallow certain things. And it's always been this way. We knew it was coming. The fact that the Geelong started bleeding and want to do this victim mentality, stuff them. They get enough. They have gotten enough rides out of the AFL. And if they don't want to play on the MCG where the grand finals played, they don't deserve to be in finals.
Incredibly biased point of view. If it was us, we'd be howling. And I'm on the side of Geelong here, as I've said. I know what all the precedents are. I know what the reality is. But if I was a Geelong supporter, I'd be pretty dark that I'm having to play a qualifying final at someone else's home ground when I've earned the right by finishing above them on the ladder.
Well, if you're saying that Geelong supporters are very unhappy, you just made me happy because I hate the bastards.
Yeah, well, all that notwithstanding, we now have a week off, which is bloody annoying. Does anyone think the bye week will be around after this season?
I think it will depend on what the results show for the year. If it's a situation where the teams that play and win the first game to go straight into the preliminary final, and if they lose in the preliminary final again, then I think we'll have a situation where Clarkson, who's already calling for it to be abandoned, will then get joined by many other coaches, and maybe that might happen. But on the contrary, if the teams that have the rest win their preliminary finals and go through the grand final, then I think it will stay.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. Clarkson's very strong on it, and he's apparently got a few of the other coaches. They're not liking it so much either. But they brought it in to stop teams resting players in the last round, and we've gone and done it.
Tanking.
But, I mean, like, that's been going on for 100 years. What is actually wrong with teams resting players? You know, what's wrong with it? Who cares? This is driven by television, and it really bugs me because it, again, affects the integrity of the competition. You've got a situation where, the top four teams are actually disadvantaged, not only because they've, the other teams have got to rest as well, but because they actually lose momentum by being potentially two games in four or five weeks. So I don't like it at all, and I think the Scott boys don't like it either. There's one or two others, and do you reckon, Macca, we might have tried a bit harder had there not been a bye next week? I reckon we might have, because momentum then would have been an issue.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure you're right. It's certainly, you do need the momentum going in there, and if it wasn't for the week's bye, I'm sure we would have been at it a lot harder than we were.
Yep. So I think we're going to wrap it up here because there's not a lot else to talk about.
Essendon didn't make the finals.
No, and I think that's a good thing. Keep people nice and fit in case we need them. Obviously, next week is bye week. We will have a Tuesday night live on Tuesday night. Also, tentatively on Wednesday night, there might be a podcast on the finals with myself, Macca 19 from the Port Board, Willow from the Cats Board, can't remember his name from the Richmond Board, and can't remember his name from the Swans Board, that's been organised by our podcast. So keep an eye on the Big Footy Boards and Twitter for that. That should be interesting because it'll be other teams opinions as well as our own. And I think at this stage I'll be broadcasting that. It could be on a different one, but I'll let you know the details if and when. And then, of course, no Thursday night preview cast this week. Scorpus has the week off. Any last words, guys?
Yeah, and obviously no Sunday, I would have thought then.
No, hopefully Sunday I will be celebrating the Flinders University Stingrays winning their first grand final over Gaza. Fingers crossed.
Good luck, Nikki, and I'm still disappointed you girls aren't called the Crabs.
No, the boys are the Crabs, we're the Stingrays.
All right, well, let's wrap it up. Thanks, everyone, for sticking with us with a late start, those on the chat. And I don't know who Hector is, but thanks, Hector, for your input on the chat there. More the merrier. And as I mentioned, we will see you on Tuesday night. There's no outro music, but hopefully, fingers crossed, I might actually have an internet connection on Tuesday and we'll be back to bloody normal. See you guys.
Yeah, good night, all.
Not all.